So in terms of managing risk, let us go to the next step, which is creating what is called the risk response. Okay. Now, typically, after we have identified the risks and quantified the risks, the next step is to typically determine what is going to be our response mechanism to those risks. Okay. Now, there are four main strategies which we can use for negative risks. The first one is mitigating the risk. How do we mitigate the risk? The second one is how do we avoid the risk? The third one is how do we transfer the risk? And the fourth one is retaining the risk or risk acceptance. Let's look at some of these parameters, the four broad approaches to to manage or four broad approaches to risk response. So let's take the first one, mitigating the risk. Now, mitigation of risk involves reducing the likelihood or possibility of occurrence of the risk or an adverse event, and thereby reducing the impact of that event also. For example, computers get infected with virus while downloading files or through portable drives like flash drives or external hard disk drive. So how do we mitigate this risk? We mitigate this risk by installing and using antivirus, as one cannot prevent downloads or use of portable drives or flash drives or pen drives. So we mitigate this risk by, installing an antivirus over there. So that's mitigating risk. Now, general risk mitigation strategies that can be followed for technical cost and scheduling risks. Okay. So, for example, if you take technical risks, in a technical risk is suppose you want to emphasize team support and avoid standalone project structure. What is the method of mitigation? We can either increase the project manager's authority, or we can improve the problem handling skills of the team and communication in the team to reduce this risk of, standalone. We can increase the frequency and monitoring of the project and the review of the project, and we can use WBS and critical path method easily. Okay. Then cost risks. We can increase the frequency of the project monitoring. We can use WBS and critical path method. Again, we can improve communication, project goal understanding and team support, and increase the project manager's authority. In scheduling risk, again, we can minimize or mitigate this risk by increasing the frequency of monitoring using tools like WPS and CPM, and selecting the most experienced project managers to help us in the project implementation phase. Okay, now the second approach to risk of risk response is avoiding risk. Now, avoiding risk is to see the risk and avoid walking on that path, okay? Or changing the project plan that eliminates that condition of risk. For example, if laptops and computers are going to get affected by virus due to downloads or use of portable drives like pen drives, then completely stop downloads and prevent use of, block all the the USB ports that allow the pen drives to be used, and therefore viruses from getting into the PC or the laptop. So that is a method of risk avoidance. We avoid the risk. Now some inherent risk will always be there in all projects and businesses, which cannot be avoided, so we have to live with that risk. The third approach towards risk response is transferring risk. Now, in transferring risk, the typical approach is to transfer the risk to some other party. We pay a premium to pass the risk to a third party. For example, doing back-to-back contracts with vendors and suppliers to, pass on the risk to them, or linking subcontractor payments to project completion dates, or requiring build, own, operate, transfer provisions, or taking insurance like key man insurance for risk arising out of loss of a key person or a key project resource. So these are called risk transfer. Then we can insert what are called force majeure clauses in the contract, which frees the project implementation team or the organization from project completion deadlines or penalties in case of situations which are beyond the control of the contractor, like earthquakes or fires or wars or floods or riots or acts of terrorism, or willful sabotage, or high attrition rate, a sudden, electricity shutdown, or anything that can create this, we transfer the risk. Then the fourth approach to the risk response is retaining the risk or risk acceptance. Now, there will be some risk inherent to the project which cannot be mitigated, which cannot be avoided, and which cannot be transferred. In that case, we have to make a conscious decision to accept the risk. Then we have to, you know, find out whether the what is the impact of the risk, high or low. If there is no way of reducing, mitigating, or avoiding the risk, then it might, the cost of risk mitigation can be much higher than the risk itself. Then in that case, we live with the risk and make a contingency plan to handle the risk as and when it comes up. So these are the four broad approaches that one can have towards this. Now, once we have the risk response, then the next one may be to have, you know, the risk control. So once the strategy for managing each risk impact or combination is decided, the next important step is to select the appropriate controls for risk where it is decided to mitigate the risk. Now, risk avoidance may require detection of the risk along with procedures and controls to avoid it. The choice of control depends on the severity and nature of the risk. So, for example, Mumbai, which has a very low incidence of power failures, one may require a small UPS with backup time of only 10-20 minutes, as the power will typically be restored in that time frame. But if you are in Pune or Nasik or some other place which has higher incidence of power failures, you may take a UPS with higher backup times, or you may take a larger UPS with larger backup times as a strategy. Okay? So, typically, so additionally, in the other cities, one may also require a diesel generator set or a gen set of 3-4 hours capacity to supply the power till it is restored. So UPS is used to toggle the power from the mains to the genset and back and again to the mains as soon as it is restored. So this could be a risk, you know, mitigation strategy for a city where power failures are very high. Okay. Now for the same risk, the level of risk control will vary with the severity of the risk, the ability of the business to tolerate and absorb the risk, and the ability of the business to afford the risk. For example, in the above example, for example, a genset with 4 hours backup will involve heavy capital expenditure plus higher operating expenses, which every business cannot afford. Controls can vary as widely as the risk. A judicious choice needs to be made between balancing the risk and the control. Now, risk response control in terms of risk control is, you know, how do we execute the risk response strategy? What is the method of triggering the risk event? When does the contingency plan get triggered off? And how do we watch out for new risks? So these are the parameters that we have to build into the risk profile. And we also have to create a change management system where we are monitoring, tracking and reporting the risk. We are fostering an open organization environment to discuss the risk, repeating risk identification and assessment exercises, and assigning and documenting responsibility that can again manage the risks. So this is the risk response matrix. So risk event, for example, what is the typical response, what is the contingency plan, and what is the trigger? So say, for example, you have an interface problem. You can mitigate interface problems with prototype testing. What is the contingency plan? You work around till test results come and you trigger if it is not solved within 24 hours. Say, for example, the freezing system, again, you can mitigate with prototype testing. Contingency plan is to reinstall the operating system and still frozen after 1 hour. User backlash, mitigate by prototype demonstration. Contingency plan is to increase the staff support and trigger can be called from top management. Equipment malfunction, you mitigate the risk by selecting reliable vendor and transfer the risk through warranty. Contingency plan is order placement, trigger when the equipment fails. Owner is the, you know, on-site support system and admin for this. So this is a risk response system. Now let us look at top 10 risk item tracking. Now this is a method by which the organization creates a, you know, a template and records the top 10 risks in terms of high probability and high impact, and identifies the risks to maintain an awareness of these top 10 risks throughout the life of the project. Now, these top 10 risks will be, you know, reviewed periodically so that attention is focused on them at all the time. It will list, and this top 10 risk ranking can keep changing. So we will list the current ranking, previous ranking, number of times the risk appears on the list over a period of time, and a summary of progress made in resolving the risk item. So for example, this is an example, this is the top 10 risk item tracking system. So this could have a risk item, you know, how many, what was the month rank this month, what was the rank last month, the number of months that it has appeared in, and what is the risk resolution progress. So for example, inadequate planning, this month it is number one on the risk, last month it was two, and it has appeared in the top list for the, it has remained in this top 10 for the last 4 months. What is the risk resolution progress? You work on revising the entire project plan. Poor, you know, definition or scope of work, number two this month, number three last month, and appearing in the system for 3 months, holding meetings with the project customer and sponsor to clarify scope. So there are multiple these things, so, you know, points on how each risk can be mitigated, and this is a typical example of what we see as a top 10 risk item tracking system. Now, project tracking meetings, okay. Now, project tracking meetings is another place where one can identify risks which are likely to hit the project in the near future. Each project team member is aware of the risks that are likely to emerge in his or her area of work or in his or her area of specialization. Good project managers should use the project tracking meeting or review meetings not only to review the status but also to identify sources of new risk and also to, you know, understand the progress on previously identified risks. Having the identified risk, there has to be a formal process for understanding and managing the risk. Typically, the risk management therefore will involve the following steps. In the project tracking meeting, the risk management will involve the following steps. What is the risk identification, quantification, classification, the response development, the response execution, the response monitoring, and the response and the risk closure. So this is how these steps will be. A properly defined process which actually takes the project from risk detection to closure, to risk closure, will actually help in gliding over the eventualities, prevent ups and downs in the project, prevent, you know, constant changes to the project, and, you know, and result in the project moving ahead smoothly on track. So this is the purpose of the project tracking meeting. So we will look at another subtopic in risk management called expert judgment. Now, expert judgment is used by many organizations to, you know, understand and identify potential project risks. Now, expert judgment is typically provided by project managers who have previously worked on the project or subject matter experts who understand what is project management, who, you know, been through this process of managing a few projects and therefore understand what are the potential risks. They can easily categorize the risks as high, medium and low, with or without too many sophisticated techniques, just from judgment and intuitive feeling. They can also create and monitor a watch list, a list of risks that are low priority but are still identified as potential risk, and a typical low priority risk which could be, you know, kind of a surprise and topple the whole project, you know, on its head. Now, so that was expert judgment. Now, quantitative risk analysis often follows the qualitative risk analysis, but both can also be done together and simultaneously. Large complex projects involve leading edge technologies, often require quantitative analysis of the risks. The main techniques of quantitative risk analysis are typically the decision tree analysis, the simulation analysis, and the sensitivity analysis. Now, decision tree analysis and expected monetary value is a diagramming method, or a method by which you use to help select the best course of action in situations in which future outcomes are uncertain. The expected monetary value, or the EMV, is the product of the risk event probability and the risk event's monetary cost. So the cost of the risk multiplied by the probability of that risk gives you the estimated monetary value. You can draw a decision tree to help find out the EMV of a project. So if you see the next diagram, this is how it is. So you have a decision. Now this decision impacts project 1 and project 2. Okay. Now project 1, probability 0.2 multiplied by the value of the risk gives you an EMV of plus $60,000. And the second risk has a probability of 0.8, but its outcome is minus $40,000. So it gives you minus $32,000. So the net is around plus $28,000, which you can see over here. So project 1's net EMV is $60,000 minus $32,000, which gives you $28,000. Now project 2 has three risks. One with a probability of 0.2, another with a probability of 0.1, and a third with a probability of 0.7. The risk number 1 with a probability of 0.2 has a value of $50,000. So 0.2 into $50,000 is minus $50,000, actually gives you minus $10,000. Then the second one has a risk of probability of 0.1 and a value of minus $20,000. So 0.1 into minus $20,000 gives you a minus $2,000, and then 0.7 into plus $60,000, that gives you 42. So if you do 42,000 minus 10 minus 2, actually gives you $30,000. So the project 1's EMV is $28,000 and project 2's expected monetary value is $30,000. So they are marginally different, but this is one way of estimating that project 2 probably has a higher risk than the project 1. The third method of understanding, quantifying the risks is sensitivity analysis. Now, many feasibility studies and project cost analysis use sensitivity analysis as a method of understanding the effect of changing one or more variables on the outcome. So, for example, many people may use to determine what the monthly payments for a loan will be with the different interest rates or periods of loan for determining the break-even points of the project. Spreadsheet software such as Excel is a common tool for performing sensitivity analysis. So one can pick up any parameter like, say, key resources or inflation, or if your project has a lot of imports based on dollar rate going up, so the change in exchange rate fluctuation, what could be the impact on the profitability, what could be the impact on this thing, or if key people were to leave, what will be the impact on the ultimate delivery of the project. So this can be done as another method of quantifying the risks. Okay. Now in terms of residual and secondary risk, while you identify the risk, we typically look at the primary risk. Some risks may have residual and secondary risks. Okay. Now, residual risks are risks that remain after all the response strategies have been implemented. We have not been able to fully eliminate the impact of the risk, but some of it still remains. And the secondary risks are a direct result of implementing a risk response. So, for example, there is a primary risk. I implement a risk response approach. I create a secondary risk in the process. So, these are the two other important risks that we need to understand in the process of risk identification. Then we have contingency planning, which is what happens if the risk will happen. If the risk occurs, this is the plan that the company will implement when the risk has finally occurred. It is a sequence of plan of actions that will reduce or mitigate the negative impact of a risk event. What is the risk of not having a contingency plan? When we don't have a contingency plan, you may slow the managerial response, because then you will be forced to think of what to do when the risk has occurred. Whereas here a pre-thought has been given, and with a cool and calm mind, it has been determined what to do in case the risk occurs. Secondly, decisions made when no contingency plan is there actually creates pressure for the managers, and therefore the decisions made under pressure could be potentially be dangerous, costly, and may also be wrong. So that's contingency planning. Then we have risk and contingency planning. So for example, in technical risk, what could be the backup strategy The backup strategy in case the technology fails is assessing whether technical uncertainties can be resolved or alternative technologies can be used. In terms of scheduling risk, in case of scheduling risk, if there's some mistake in the scheduling, use the slack to increase the risk of a late project finish, or you have imposed duration date, which is the absolute project finish date, or you do compression techniques and project schedules to have shortened project duration times or completion times. Then you have cost risks and contingency. If the cost increases, then problems can take longer to solve than expected. Decide to use the schedule to solve cash flow problems should be avoided. And price protection risk, that is rise in input cost increase during the duration of the project, can be passed on to the customer by having suitable escalator clauses in your proposal to the customer. Then funding risks. Change in the supply of fund for the project can dramatically affect the likelihood of the implementation or the successful completion of the project or even the profitability of the project. Now, contingency funding. This is another thing that projects require to cover project risk identified and unknown. Now, size of the fund reflects the overall risk of the project. Now, budget reserves are linked to identified risks of specific work. So, companies may make a provision for these risks by creating budgets for this. And management funds are large funds that are to be used to overcome unforeseen risks because change in project scope or the total project cost and etc. Now, let us look at another strategy called buffers. Now, buffers are used by project managers to build in. We have a system of buffering built into the project planning and project management system to reduce the impact of risks. For example, if a project head expects 20% absenteeism and attrition that can possibly delay the project, then this can be mitigated by providing 20% extra manpower. Now, buffering can be decided by identifying which tasks are going to be affected by which risks, determining the extent of the impact due to that risk, and quantifying it in terms of effort, time or cost. Only when we quantify the time, effort or cost, and if we see that the mitigation cost is much less, we will take that mitigation step. Then providing the appropriate amount of buffer to overcome the risk is the important part. There are three types of buffers that are used in the project management system. The first buffer is called the resources buffer, which typically provide more resources like people, equipment, money, to handle risks and issues. Then we have time buffers, which allow us to cover for slippage in time or for allowing unexpected events to be covered. Then you have natural buffers. Usually project planning will be based on normal working hours of 8 hours per day and 5 days per week. In case of an issue, the project team can use extra hours every day or weekends to complete the project. Since these buffers are naturally available, they are called natural buffers and no extra provisioning is done for them. Now, where do we place the buffers in the project plan? Buffers are provided at each stage of the project. You have what are called project end buffers. Now, these are typically provided at the end phase of the project so that the project does not cross the deadline, and this is a time buffer. So, for example, if you think a project can be done in 6 months, you can commit 7 months with a 1 month buffer. Then you have milestone and phase end buffers. To prevent delay in one phase or milestone eating into the next phase or milestone, one can provide buffers at each phase in terms of time or resources. So, we have a buffer built in at each milestone, at each review process. And in case we have an overrun in one milestone, it may not impact the next one because of the availability of that milestone buffer. Then you have task level buffers. This is where pure estimates are there, and we add buffers to those tasks that are likely to be impacted by certain risks. For example, resources can sometimes also be used as task level buffers. For example, you have a task which is very critical. Instead of having one person to do it, you may have a second person as a standby available on a part-time basis to also help in the job. Then the next place where you can place buffers are buffering tasks on the critical path. Since it is known that if anything on the critical path is delayed, the entire project can get delayed, it is important to buffer some of the tasks on the critical path with adequate resources in terms of time, money, and people. Then buffering non-critical paths. Now, many non-critical tasks actually have a lot more slack, and therefore non-critical tasks see a lot of variation, thus leading to non-critical tasks impacting the critical task, which was so far not critical, has now become critical. Now, typically this happens because most project managers will focus all their time and attention on managing only the critical path functions, thus diluting their control and the performance of the non-critical functions. So it is a good idea to buffer some of the non-critical functions that could adversely impact the critical functions. These buffers on the non-critical paths are called as the link buffers. Now, this is a contingency fund estimate. So, for example, if we take design, budget baseline is $500, budget reserve is $15, and therefore we have kept $515. In this, coding has $900 as the baseline, $80 as a reserve, and $980 as the budget. 22 and 22. So, on a $1,420 project, $97 is additionally budgeted for contingency, giving us a project cost of $1,517, and there's an additional management reserve of $50 kept for any unforeseen activity or unscheduled thing that crops up in the part of the project. The next thing that is important in risk management and risk control is a change management system. Now, change management system and the control of the change management, what are the sources of change? Change can happen if project scope change by the sponsor, implementation of contingency plans that can create a change, and improvement changes. Now, change control system process typically identifies the proposed changes. It lists down the expected effect of the changes on the schedule and the budget. It will review, evaluate, and approve or disapprove the changes formally. It will negotiate and resolve conflicts of change, condition, and cost. It will communicate the change to all the impacted people within the project management team. It will assign responsibility for implementing the change. It will adjust the master schedule and budget and track all the changes that are to be implemented. Okay? So this is the change control process. So somewhere in the project, a change has originated. Then there's a change request that has been submitted. This change is reviewed. Once it is reviewed, you can have a yes or a no. If it is no, you go back to the change request submitted. If it is approved, you update the plan of record and distribute for action. And communicate for action. So benefits of a change control system. Typically the approval process disapproves or discourages inconsequential changes in the formal process. Cost of changes are maintained in a log. Integrity of the WBS and performance measures is maintained. We have allocation of use of budget and management reserve funds are tracked. Responsibility of implementing a change is clarified and handled. Effect of changes is visible to all the people involved. Implementation of changes monitored, and scope changes will be quickly reflected in the baseline and performance measure. So that is the key advantage of the change control system. In addition to doing all these methods, today we have a lot of softwares that are available to manage risks and do project risk management. Now, risk management registers can be created in simple Word or Excel file as a part of a database. There are more sophisticated risk management software such as the Monte Carlo simulation tools, which help in analyzing project risks. The PMI Risk Specific Interest Group's website, www.riskiq.com, has a detailed list of software products that assist both in the process of and in the management and tracking of risk management. On an ongoing basis, what is the process of handling the risks? Once the risks have been identified, there has to be a system that manages the risk on an ongoing basis. Usually, risk management involves the following processes, which is risk identification, which identifies the risk, risk quantification, which puts a value to that risk, risk classification, which classifies the risk as high, medium, and low. Then the risk response development in terms of the four methods we have in, what should be the response, should be avoid the risk? Should we, accept the risk? Should we, mitigate the risk, etc.? Then the risk response execution and risk response monitoring and risk closure. Now, most of these steps in the risk management happen at the planning stage, and therefore a clearly defined method and process is required to track this and manage this on an ongoing basis. Now, risk registers discussed earlier is a good way of handling this, or top 10 risk, always being discussed at every review meeting is another good way of handling this. They will ensure that the risks are minimized and project execution happens both within time and budget deadlines. So, what are the key good re finally, what is good project management? What are the results of good project risk management? So, unlike crisis management, good project risk management often goes unnoticed. It is a proactive method of seeing problems in advance and taking steps to reduce them, minimize them, mitigate them, or remove them. Well-run projects appear to be almost effortless, but a lot of work goes into running the project well. Project managers should learn how to make their jobs easy by making or taking advantage of these tools and methodologies. Summary: this chapter is finally over, and this chapter deals with the risks involved in project management. A risk is a likelihood of an event happening which can either have a negative or a positive impact on the project. A project charter identifies all the risks that a project may have to all the stakeholders. Many organizations have checklists of possible risks that they have come across based on previous similar projects and which can cause problems in future projects. Using these checklists is good unless it becomes more an exercise of filling the checklist, which is not risk management, but just a clerical activity of filling the list. A better method of risk management is to get all the stakeholders to a risk identification workshop where the team brainstorms on the risks using the checklist identified abroad. Above, okay. Four major strategies to handle the risk are risk avoidance, risk mitigation, risk transfer, and risk acceptance. A project managers can build suitable buffers in the project management plan to reduce the impact of risk on the project. There are three types of buffer. We have resources buffer, time buffer, and natural buffers. Regular meetings, regular reviews of the risk owners, of the project managers, or the project implementers can track the risks on the ongoing basis. All steps, planned, unplanned, can be taken to manage the risks discussed. A risk register is a good way of managing the risk on an ongoing basis in a structured, professional way, and a proper process to handle the risk as they arise is a good way to keep the project on track within time and budgetary deadlines. This ends our chapter on project risk management. Thank you so much for your time and attention. Hope it was an insightful journey for you, and look forward to meeting you in the next chapter. Thank you.